Welcome to episode 38 of Skyjacks, Courier's Call. I'm your host and narrator, Drew Merzhieski. I'm joined by Allison Grauer, Palomi Pertap, and Eric Atano-Saez to bring you a story of adventure, skyships, mail carriers, and kids, just like you. Last time, our favorite couriers, Cece, June, and Kieran, had a great time with Bran, Fenton, Ruby, and the crew of the Glass. When the couriers at last made their way back to the Red Audrin, however, Captain Dennison seemed less than thrilled by the whole situation. Are these apprentices going to be grounded, or will they fly onward to the next stop on the route? Heed the call, couriers. Stand to, and let's fly.
Gone are the days when it was easy to ride,
singing way, hey, ho.
But the years haven't withered my joy and my pride,
singing way, hey, ho.
I've never been much for the pistol or blade,
singing way, hey, ho.
For the sun is my course and the sky is my trade,
singing way, hey, ho.
My mother, she told me that life would be fine if you're free with the water but savor the wine, and to never be hurried but always on time,
singing way, hey, ho. Singing way, hey, ho.
The glass begins to, like, peel off, and Captain Dennison is standing on the deck, and he rounds on the five of you.
What about Ruby? She'd be six of us.
Ruby's exempt, because she's cool.
Ruby's special.
Ortwin and Olwena, they both, like, have Ruby, and he looks over and goes, take her to her bunk. And so they, like, take her away. You five, in my office, now.
Okay.
And he turns, and he goes, Winchwin, full ahead. As he steps down into the Red Audrin office. And the five of you kind of go inside. He goes and he sits behind his desk.
What in the name of all the lumens in this world happened?
Sir, if I may attempt to answer that, on our day off, we're charged by someone in need to deliver a package.
Yeah.
So we did.
So what you're saying is this is a job-related adventure.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you get in barter and trade?
We got a ride from the Glass.
Smart.
And Captain Mr. Brian Baruser answered two of the three offered questions. Kieran still has one in the bank, right, Kieran?
Yep, I still have one.
You should tell Muldoon you have that. Captain Ooh. Foxkill.
Okay.
When we see him next. And you, Bran and Fenton, how did you get wrapped up in this?
Well, sir, they were in trouble, and they were being chased by privateers, and we jumped in and helped. Oh, I know, it was privateers.
Eves, Augur, you're dismissed. Go and work.
And they're like, thank you, sir. All right, sir, thank you. And they duck out and they leave. You three stay.
As they shut the door, the three of you are sitting in Captain Dennison's office. And we see Lysander kind of walk across the desk and kind of picks up the cat and puts it in his lap.
It's been quite the eventful so far route for you three.
Yes, sir.
Are you all right?
Yes, sir.
We got our lumps, but we're okay. Like overall, we're alive, and that counts.
Kieran is still definitely holding their shoulder.
Are you hurt, Ro?
A little bit.
We'll see to that after this, then. All right.
Okay.
I seem to remember I told you in Otterbox that this is part of the job.
Yeah.
So my question for the three of you is still, after having this harrowing experience, you still want to be couriers?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now more than ever.
All right, then.
Good. Because the three of you are on the committee for Audrin Prum.
What did he say?
Audrin Prum. You know what Audrin Prum is, right?
Can you just explain what that means?
Audrin
just in the
Prum.
Simplest terms.
Audrin Prum. A little after the midway through the route, all the ships, all the Audrins, we meet together and we celebrate being halfway. A little more than halfway, I suppose. We celebrate with a dance, a promenade, if you were. There's food and dancing and music. It'll be a lot of fun. It's also a good time for us to make changes to our rosters. Change up people, switch over cargo, routes, things like that. And it is customary for each Audrin to present a theme for prom. The three of you will be coming up with our theme.
I'm so confused. June looks at Kieran and Cece.
It's a dance. You get dressed up. There's food. There's drink. There's music. You'll be asked probably by someone to go to the dance.
Kieran is equally
like
confused.
Like a date, sir?
Like a date, I would say. You may also ask someone if you like to take someone.
Do we have to?
Oh my god, this is so...
Don't worry if you don't have clothes. We'll be going to the old Swiftwell Estate in the Honeysmoke Mountains, and there's a room full of dresses and coats and things you might want.
Oh my god. And we just get them. You're just gonna, like, give them
to
clothes.
To borrow.
Oh my god.
And then to return.
Oh my god. Cece is, like, melting in her chair, just going, oh my god!
I sense that you're excited there.
Sir, we have to come up with a theme?
A theme. It can be anything.
Is it going to happen for sure? Or do the themes get...
Oh, we'll vote on them and we'll choose one.
Oh!
But just have one prepared.
Okay.
And also prepare how you would decorate it. And the music for it. Things like that. Now, we have an entire stop before we get to Audrin Prom, so you have plenty of time.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, y'all.
Now, here's what I am presenting to you. I want the three of you to take the next hour, eat, sleep, rest, do whatever you need to, and then get to work.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hymnal, Whitwick, you are dismissed. Rao, you stay.
Kieran stiffens and looks at Kieran.
I think Kieran stiffens at the same time and kind of sets their jaw.
Cece winks and just mouths the word Audrin Prom to Kieran before prancing away.
June hesitates and then catches the captain's eye, I think, and then gets up out of their chair and leaves.
We hear the door close and Dennison looks over the desk at you, Kieran.
Let's take care of that shoulder.
And he gets up out of his desk, and he goes to his little closet where he sleeps. And you hear the curtain, like, go back, and he, like, gets a small... And you can see, Kieran, as you're standing there, like, holding your shoulder, you see that there's literally... It's a bed that is just the whole closet, and there's, like, a sheet above it. And there's, like, some pillows in there, and you can see that, like, there's obviously a place where, like, underneath the bunk where there's a little basket for Lysander, and there's some personal effects and things like that, but he sleeps in this closet. And he goes up and he pulls down a chest, a small little chest, and he opens it, and it's got a bunch of, like, ointments and bandages and stuff like that. And he, like, takes his coat off and hangs it up and puts it back the curtain and says, sit down.
Kieran sits down.
And he gets a stool and kind of sits down. And he begins to, like, work the shoulder to, like, see what's going on with it. And as he does, he goes, how'd this happen?
Well, the first time I landed on it. And then the second time it got hit. And the third time it got hit again.
Well, luckily, it doesn't seem like anything's broken.
That's good.
But you have dislocated the shoulder. We're going to have to put it back.
Okay.
All right. And he's like, you want something to bite down on, or are you good?
Can we...
And he snaps it right before you say something.
I love the moment where Kieran's just like, what? Ah!
And he pops it back in place and it hurts. It hurts so bad.
Ow.
But immediately he's like, it's all right. It's all right. And he gets gauze and begins to like basically immobilize it against you.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's doing that, he goes, so were you going to tell me you stole from me now? Or were you going to tell me later?
I don't know what you mean, sir.
Ro, you stole 3 copper bits from the ship. You stole 3 copper bits from the ship. Not from me, by the way. From the courier service. I know you did it. And I've waited this entire time hoping that you'd bring it back. And if anything, you just lied to me as well. What do you have to say for yourself?
It starts as them thinking about how to reply to Captain Dennison. And then a little bit of that fire that came up when Bran thought, this was it. This is how we go down. Comes up again, and they open their mouth and then close it and lean back in the chair and cross their arms over their chest.
Here's the thing, Kieran. I don't mind stealing. I don't. I don't believe everything's black and white like that. There are reasons to steal. There are reasons that are good to steal. And there are reasons that are not good. Had it been for me, I don't know. But you stole from the courier service. And the courier service uses that money to help other people. So I will give you one last chance to come clean. And after that, we'll see what happens.
I think Kieran just stays quiet. Okay. Keeps their stance.
Very well, then. It is within my rights, Kieran, to dismiss you from the service. Coriander and the Swiftwell Courier Service does not truck with those that steal from the service for no good reason. If you can give me a good reason, that'd be one thing. But you've chosen to be silent. I will not dismiss you, though. I don't believe what you have done warrants it. So, I will put it this way. I will mark the 3 copper bits as part of your end pay. And you may keep it. But you are never allowed in this office again without me. And you will be working very hard the rest of this route. Well, that is not what the hard thing will be. I trusted you. And I can't do that now. Hopefully in time, maybe I will again. But you are dismissed.
Yes, sir. And then they just run out of the office.
And the camera lingers on Dennison as he sits on that stool. And the door closes and we see him sigh and put his head in his hands.
couriers, and welcome to the Midroll. I'm Drew, your host and narrator. As we bring Teshirt to a close and prepare for the next arc of the story, we want to offer our most wonderful and amazing gratitude to some of the Kickstarter backers who made Season 2 possible. Simon Bowler, thank you. El Pascado, thank you. Kyle J. Thomas, thank you so much. Rebecca Harris, thank you. Tracy O'Brien, thank you. Winthin and Cassiana, thank you so much. We wouldn't be here without all of you, so thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts. Thanks also to each of you who have shared our show with your friends, family members, and someone you think might enjoy the adventures of the Swiftwell Courier Service. It means so much to us that you enjoy the show and are spreading the love to others. We hope our story continues to bring joy and inspiration through the difficult times many of us are now experiencing. We love you all, and we hope you know that we're in this together. Thank you for being with us. And now, with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
Singing way, hey, ho.
Where do you go, Kieran?
Did June and Cece wait outside the office for Kieran, or did they?
It's up to them.
Go elsewhere.
I kind of feel like we probably would have stayed long enough to hear through the door how serious it was going to get.
Mm.
And then my thought, Aaron, let me know what you think, was that we probably went to the bunk.
Yeah. Like my thought was like, I honestly thought we left.
Yeah.
Because I was like, there's no way we'd know that it's like you're getting absolutely destroyed. You know?
Yeah.
We're stupid high school kids. We're freshmen.
We're also exhausted and hungry and dehydrated.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think we probably went and like, maybe we went and gathered a bunch of snacks and stuff and went back to the bunk to wait for Kieran.
So can we all say that you guys all gather in your bunk for this last scene as we close out this half of the season?
Yeah. I think Kieran bursts into the bunk. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
Are you okay? That's a no.
No, I'm not okay.
Okay, what happened?
I think they budge over and they pat the bunk that we're both sitting on, and they make Cece and June make room for Kieran to sit down.
Oh, also you're like your arm is all bandaged.
Yeah, like all trussed up by my side.
Come, take a seat, young one. Chat.
You know how I took a couple of copper pieces from Captain Hudson.
Oh, please don't tell me you got snagged.
He found out.
Ooh.
And I got in trouble.
What happened?
And I think Kieran looks like very, very sad, almost disappointed in themselves. I don't know. But I feel like I don't know what happened. He was asking me why I took it, and I didn't answer, and I just got mad, and I still have them, and he said I didn't take them from him, I took them from the courier service, and I feel really bad. I feel really bad, but I don't know what to do now.
You can still too late. It's not too late to change your mind if you want to give them back.
I don't. I was like a real toot about it, and I feel like it would be dumb for me to just give them back now.
Psh, that's pride talking, Kieran. And that we don't need that here. You know, you're one of us. You're our friend. We're all couriers. We're a team. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that you really tooted the bed. There's nothing wrong with admitting that. I do it all the time.
She does.
Meaning I toot the bed.
Yeah, she toots the bed.
But in reality, I make like tons of mistakes. So there's something that like somebody told me recently that's like really, Sue's like really wise, lived like a super cool life, is super dope, and like travel the world. And she was like, you're going to make mistakes. And like, that's kind of whatever. And that's like part of being an adult and being alive is making mistakes and owning up to them and stuff. And like, if they're saying it's true, like they're way cooler than us. And, you know, so it's no sweat. I know it feels like the weight of the world right now. And it feels like this massive thing, but it's like, whatever. You can just be like, I'm sorry. And like, you're going to take a huge fat L, but you know, you're at least making it right.
But I didn't make a mistake. I did it on purpose.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? June looks really thoughtful and is kind of like staring at the far wall, deep in thought, brow furrowed. I mean, I think I know what you mean, Karen, when you said you kind of were attuned about it.
Yeah.
I can think of several occasions when I was a real toot about something that my mom called me out on. It's something just kind of happens, right? Like you don't.
Yeah.
You're not trying to be bad. You just.
It just happens.
Get upset and can't think clearly or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess this is the question. Well, you did it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But like, why?
Well, we wanted fun money.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we'd have more fun if we had more fun money.
Is it because it was called fun money? Was that the mistake? That it just made it too logical?
No.
Or... No, it was just an impulse that you had.
It was just easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, it's easy to do the easy thing. It's easy to be bad. It's easy to like, you know, have short-sightedness and things like that. And like, that's what leads me to all my problems all the time. So like, I'm with you, but I'm going to double down, friendo, and say there's no shame or fear in owning up, being a big kid, and being like, yo, Denison, take these bricks back. Take these bits.
Okay.
Denison, understand. Denison, don't forget. Denison is someone who was down a different path and turned back. Don't forget what we learned, winkity wink. So remember, if anybody's going to understand, it's cool pirate uncle who used to be like a evil red feather dragon or something.
I hope they don't mean he was actually a dragon.
Oh, I kind of do.
I really hope that's not what they meant.
I know. I think it's like a nickname because like he breathed fire or like,
I mean, he kind of does sound like he's been breathing fire and that's why his voice is so raspy.
Right?
I think, well,
like, he's all like, hey, what happened up there?
Yeah.
Mine's not as good as yours, Cece. Never mind.
It's okay.
I think while their friends are talking about Captain Denison as a dragon, Karen is just chewing the inside of their cheek and kind of nods thoughtfully.
Yeah.
Does anyone have like a small pocket or a pouch or something?
We could make one really quick.
Let's do it.
June pulls a little bit of scrap canvas and some cording and... sort of like, it's a hideous little bag when she's done, but she does it and she knots it and she's like, there you go.
I think while...
It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know.
It's beautiful. I love it. Not I think while she's doing that, Karen takes like just tears a piece of paper out of their sketchbook and like scrawls out, I'm sorry, and like initials it and like tucks it into the bag with the 3 coins. Okay.
You gonna deliver it?
I'm gonna deliver it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'll be
it's
right
like
back.
An apology pizza.
Hey, Kieran.
Yeah?
We don't think you're bad. You know that, right?
I didn't, but thank you for telling me.
We don't think you're bad.
Nah.
We think you're really, really good.
Okay. And they bolt. And I think what's going to happen is if Captain Denison's door is closed, they're just going to like leave it right next to the door jamb, and if it's slightly open, they like tuck it, they like stick a hand in and tuck it on the nearest surface and then run away.
I think it's easy enough for you to place it inside the door. It just opened the door a little bit and you put it there and you shut it. And you did it. The hour passes. Kieran, you put that into the captain's office and then go back into the room. And you guys kind of sit in the room for an hour. You eat, you talk, you discuss your adventure that you just had. And how scary but exciting and amazing it was. And how this is the work you get to do as couriers. And you kind of go over the things that happened. June thinking about almost losing themselves to that bird. Cece spending all the time that you, like, you worked with lumens and played Illimat and, like, your grandmother's spirit inhabited you, maybe? You don't know. Kieran, there's, you fought back to back with Ruby against privateers. And this all kind of comes out as you guys kind of talk about it. And I mean, Kieran, you take a moment, you look in your sketchbook, and you now have like a blood-soaked diagram from the butcher on how to remove a heart and 5 pages of constantly encrypting itself notes.
It's a weird notebook.
Your book is magic. And you guys have a moment where you realize how far you've come, where you think about that day, that windy day on the docks at Thornvale, where you said goodbye to your families and got onto this boat for adventure. And there's so much more of the route left to go. And then there's a knock on the door. And Jaegermund puts his head in. Excuse me, children. It is time, your hour is up. It is time for you to get back to work. Are you ready?
No.
And Jaegermund nods his, and we see his big white beard, his big gray beard kind of nod up and down within. It's mostly red, but it's a very colorful hat on. You know, he looks very much like Santa Claus. And he goes, I understand very much. I feel this way every morning. But if we do not work, the Ardrin does not go. And the Ardrin does not go, people do not get their mail. We cannot right wrongs and do mercies. So, Kieran, to the furnace with you.
Okay.
Cece, you are on deckhand duty.
All right.
And June, we look forward to the dinner you will prepare for us.
Cooking June.
Come. It's time to work. And he opens the door, and we see the three of you head out to begin work on the Ardrin and move forward in your adventure. It is the afternoon in Teshirt after the Red Ardrin has left. And life has gotten back to normal. Not that it wasn't normal before, but Balgair, the postmaster for the Swiftwell Courier Service in Teshirt, is dealing with lots of paperwork. The Festival of the Shifting Winds is an important time for the city. And now that it's come to an end, he has more work to get done. We see Balgair sitting at his desk. Balgair is a man probably in his late 40s or so, weathered skin, loose, dark, curly hair that kind of falls down to his shoulders. There's bits of gray in it, a light beard on his face, but crisscrossed with various scars from many adventures. He's got a pair of goggles like around his neck that's on top of like a long scarf. And we see him wearing the khaki long coat of a postmaster. They all wear this particular color. He's at his desk working when there is a knock on his door.
Who is it?
there's like a muttering from the other side of the door. Somebody's fumbling with the doorknob.
It's push.
There's the sound of something heavy being leaned. And then the doorknob turns and the door pushes. Push. Yes, quite. And then into the room comes Eustace and Phileas Youngblood. And Phileas, actually, both of them look incredibly disheveled. They're covered in dirt and sand and soot. Their hair is mussed. Their clothes are pulled at and out of sorts. They look like they've accidentally run a marathon, maybe, and fallen from a great height. And they're pretty worn out. And into the room, Eustace ushers Phileas to a chair, where Phileas dramatically drops into the chair and leans the opposite direction.
There's a window. He's looking at a window.
Yeah, broodingly towards the window.
Hand on chin.
Mm-hmm. Very, very beleaguered. And then Eustace, like, sort of like pats his shoulder to make sure he's in the chair properly, and then turns and gives a polite little bow to the postmaster.
The postmaster stands. He bows slightly again. Can I do something for you, gentlemen? I'm a little busy right now.
We completely understand, sir. Rather good of you to see us on short notice like this. This is, of course, Phileas Youngblood.
We see Balgaer, like, look over at Phileas. Phileas goes, and looks out the window again. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Right. And as you can imagine, sir, postmaster, we have been through rather a difficult time of late, and that's what brings us to your door today.
In what capacity?
Will you see, sir, some of the... And Eustace, like, pulls a little note card out of his pocket and squints at it. Some of the Swiftwell couriers appear to have gotten involved in a little bit of a thing, you see, and they've stolen, I'm afraid, Red Feather property. It's a bit of a dismaying fact, and we needed to bring it to you forthwith on the account of that my master Phileas here is in charge of recovering the item, and Swiftwell couriers appear to have run off with it.
It's a pretty serious accusation, Mr.
Oh, Eustace, sir.
Mr. Eustace.
Yes.
That is, well, let me see here. And we see him go over. He takes out little spectacles and he puts them on at his desk. He sits down. And do you have names for these particular couriers? How are you sure that they are couriers for the service?
Well, you see, sir, we were face-to-face with them, and we were in what I would consider pursuit of them, as they were trying to flee the scene of the crime, so to speak, and that's why we unfortunately come before you in such a state of disarray.
Again, I'm asking, how do you know?
Well, you see, so we asked around.
I see.
Yes.
So, what you're saying, and he takes his little spectacles off, is that you have rumor that some of our couriers absconded with Red Feather property?
Well, you see, sir, there were witnesses in the marketplace.
Do you have affidavits? Do you have any other proof, any written, anyone else here, other than your word?
Eustace holds the note card in his hands and looks sideways at Phileas.
To which Phileas goes, oh, fine. He reaches into his coat and he pulls out his letter of mark. And we see that the letter of mark is, it's a written document. It's got wax seals on it and like ribbons with written things. And it basically says that he is a privateer for the Youngbloods and that he is a captain of two ships, making him an admiral. The admiral is not in the contract or anything, but it is kind of sketched into the margins. We see that he's written admiral. He presents this to Eustace.
Eustace gives a little bow, takes the letter of mark, and then bows again to the postmaster and comes forward to present it.
And we see Balgaer take it, set it down, put his spectacles on again, and like read over it painstakingly. I imagine that there's like a 3 minute of silence between everyone in the room. All we can hear is the ticking of a clock. Finally, Balgaer puts his glasses down, and pushes the letter of mark across the desk and goes, Mr. Eustace, you are correct. This is a letter of mark. This is official, I should say. How can I help you?
Right. Well, as everything is in order, sir, we were hoping that you could produce the couriers in question and the stolen material.
You still haven't given me names.
Well, sir, we didn't have names, but
you
we
just want me to give you several couriers?
No, sir, not at all. We can provide descriptions. And he pulls out another note card and squints at it and says, one of them was tall and ginger-haired. And one of them was rather small and sort of dark-haired. They were the one holding the book, you see. And then the...
Oh, wait. Book?
Yes, sir. The stolen material from the Red Feathers was a ledger.
Is this about last night's robbery of the ledger from the regulator?
Quite so, sir. Yes, indeed. We were set to the task of returning it.
And you are... And he flips it around and reads again. Phileas Youngblood.
Admiral Phileas Youngblood, yes. That's
Admiral
correct.
Admiral Phileas Youngblood. I'll be right back. Let me check something. And we see him stand up, and he goes over to a bookcase, and he pulls out a book, and he sets it down and flips through it. And as he's looking through it, he finds something, and then goes and grabs another piece of paper, and sets it down and cross-checks it and goes, and your ships were which ships again?
The Silver Spoon and the Star Chaser. You should see it right there.
I do. I do see these here, Mr. Eustace.
Oh, very good.
They do not belong to your employer.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I beg your pardon?
Yes,
Mr. Youngblood. I am sorry to tell you if you don't already know this, but we received a communication today. We are updated, usually every day, about the shifting of boats in port. It's something the city does. And it seems to me that the latest communication we've received says that your two ships, the Silver Spoon and the Star Chaser, are now under the command of one Olivia Youngblood.
Oh, no.
Under what grounds? I can't say that, sir. Only that's been changed today. If you want to figure out what happened, you'll have to go speak to your employer, Olivia Youngblood. Olivia, not my employer. I'm an admiral. I own several ships. Well, and he looks down and goes, I do see there are some notes here. Let me look at them real quick. It says, due to gross incompetence. Well, that's... How dare she?
Obviously, there's been quite a misunderstanding here.
No, how dare she say that to me? I will find her, and we will talk strenuously. I'll write her a letter, and we will have words.
Invite her to tea.
Yes, we will invite her to tea. Eustace, come along. We shall find Olivia. Mr. Youngblood, Phileas, is it? I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. With the recent dispatches, it has also said that her yacht, the Indulgence, has left. She's no longer in Teshirt.
Dash it inconvenient, isn't that, sir?
Terribly inconvenient, Eustace. Well, what do you suppose I do then, sir? Well, Mr. Phileas, Youngblood, if I were you, I'd try to sort this out as quickly as possible with any Youngblood who will listen. Eustace?
Sir.
We're leaving.
Right away, sir.
Oh, and Mr. Youngblood, the next time you bring in gross exaggerations about my couriers, will be the last day you find any port here in Teshire. And we see Phileas look Balgeir up and down and turn around and storm out.
And on their way out the door, Eustace pops back in through the door and says, thank you so much for your time, sir. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Happy to help.
Ta.
I've bargained with madness. men who claim to be kings.
Singing way, hey, ho.
And I've seen the destruction their tempers can bring.
Singing way, hey, ho.
I've ridden the winds over mountain and plain.
Singing way, hey, ho.
Just to circle the coast and curse the mariner's name.
Singing way, hey, ho.
My father, he told me to never deceive. Be a voice to the hopeless and help those in need. And to ever be thankful for what you've received.
Singing way, hey, ho. Singing way, hey, ho.
At the bottom of the Red Audrin, there is the mail room. And there, off to the side, is a small room where the mail is sorted. And Kieran, June, and Cece, that is where we find you. Slowly working away, sorting mail.
Hey, Cece, where did you put the packages between 2 and 3 centimeters?
Oh, a centimeter? I thought, what is that? I'm sorry. What on sphere is a centimeter?
You know, it's like this big.
Oh, goodness. Well, where did I put them? If they are 2 centimeters, the packages? I've been putting those in my coffee. I thought those were sugar cubes.
Oh. That's probably why your smoker has been tasting like paper.
Yes. Sorry, I had moment, and I said this word coffee.
June, are you okay?
You guys ever have one of those days where you just, like, you can't stop getting paper cuts?
Oh.
It's been one of those days. She holds her hand up, and there's just slices and dices all over it.
Wow. Yeah, that sucks. Kieran takes a cardboard box labeled first aid kit off of the wall.
Yeah, we're definitely
out of Band-Aids.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't cover all this anyway. It's fine. It's just, I don't know. I feel like my hands are really dry right now.
Mm.
It's making it worse.
Yeah, that won't help.
Cece casts a healing spell.
Level 1?
Yes. Level 1 healing spell. Cece comes over and she goes, blows
1d4.
A gentle breeze over the hand and says, heal.
Did it work?
I don't know. How fast is it supposed to work?
It's supposed to take like 4 to 5 days to heal completely.
Awesome.
It's a slow-acting spell, but, you know.
Powerful.
But effective. Every time I've done it on my paper cuts, it's worked for me.
Thank you, Cece. I appreciate it.
I got you. I will be your cleric bard sorcerer.
You're every class, Cece, let's be honest.
Oh, geez, I'm no fighter like you. You're so big and strong.
Maybe we should take a break and like read a letter or something.
Yeah, I found one. This one is addressed to all three of us.
Ooh, let the rogue read this one.
I'm a rogue?
I thought Kieran was a wizard.
Yeah.
Wizard rogue.
Oh.
We all multi-class, June.
We do. That's right.
Okay. Dear couriers. Couriers. Dear couriers. Dear couriers? Or dear.
Wait, I need help.
It says dear couriers. Look.
Yeah, like we're all dear, I think.
Oh.
This one must.
Okay.
Yeah. This is like, imagine if all of us were talking dear.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm imagining it.
Yeah.
Dear couriers, I need help with a problem. You're nice and maybe you can help. I want to write a song. A wrong? Write a wrong. Write a wrong.
Oh, write a wrong.
Oh, I wanted to write a song.
I could write a song. We could do that. We could do both.
I'm down.
Okay. I have to say a truth to right a wrong, but I am too small and am scared. How do you not be scared when saying things?
Oh my gosh. Public speaking is the worst.
Yeah. It's kind of terrible.
It is an acquired taste, public speaking. Getting in front of a crowd. Getting the power to summon from within and say what's on your mind. Kieran, can I ask you a question? Can you describe what it's like to be able to draw, to see a picture in your head and make it come to life on a page?
I don't really think about it too much. It just kind of happens.
Boom. That is the power of how to speak your mind. Oh. You kind of got to just enter the zone. And when I say the zone means having a plan, being prepared, and having something that you know you want to say. And when you do, like Kieran, you can kind of just like do it. It kind of just comes out because it's bubbling up in you. You can't help but say it. That's how you not be scared.
Yeah. I think you just focus on the truth and say that, that'll help a lot.
Yeah. And my secret has always been, so remember at the beginning when I was joking about being Dear Audrin? Mm-hmm. I like to imagine like that I have some sort of cool thing, like either wings or in this case, like giant antlers. And that feeling of power and size gives me the ability to feel confident and powerful. Like I have this protruding antler coming out of my head. I am a deer, Cece, and I have the power to say whatever I want because I have this cool bone thing coming out of my head, and I am powerful, and I am king.
That was really good. That was a good speech.
Yeah, we're deer. Like, you gotta be a deer, you know? You gotta be a powerful, powerful antler-bearing...
stag.
Yeah! Full circle. And the high fives, Kieran. Yeah, but it's just about feeling powerful. If you know you're powerful, you know, you don't have to worry about anything. And you are powerful. You're a deer.
You know the truth, and that's powerful.
Yeah, you know?
Deer are pretty powerful. That makes sense.
Yeah, right? Like, you ever try to wrestle a deer?
You won't win.
You won't win.
You won't win.
No. I have tried. I have tried to wrestle a deer. It did not go in my favor. I lost. Gave him a good run. 4 rounds in the ring. However, on the 5th one, I got pinned.
But you secured your crown as mayor of Kid Town.
I did, because I wrestled that deer. Because
you were brave enough to wrestle a deer.
No one else was.
Which is one of the reasons why there hasn't been another mayor of Kid Town, because no one else is brave enough to wrestle a deer.
And that's why I always say, you got to take destiny by the horns. I am referencing a real-life event when I literally... wrestle the deer.
And the deer's name was Destiny.
Destiny. Damn Destiny by the horns. I was not joking when I said that. I meant you gotta grab Destiny by the horns, and you gotta flip him, and you gotta pin him, and you look at the deer in the eyes, and you say, I am the mayor. You hear me, oh, oh, and then the deer flips you over and says, I am the mayor of Kid Town. You go, okay, okay. But then the first mayor of Kid Town was the deer, Destiny. And then Destiny said, no, 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 I'm walking away from this game. And I said, can I have the crown? And then they handed me a pair of antlers that I put on my head. And then I became the mayor of Kid Town. So in closing...
The crown for Kid Town actually rules. It's really cool.
It's really cool. You know, it's called the... The Diadem of the Stag. It's pretty cool.
Kieran, what is the last question in the letter? What does it say?
It says, how do you not be scared when saying things?
I hate public speaking personally, but the biggest thing that you can do is stop and take a deep breath,
mm-hmm.
and let it out slowly, and then say the thing. Because not saying the thing is just going to make you more scared. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Preach.
It's a good question. What if we were all deer?
You know, we would be... If we were all deer, we would have a much better life. We would be in the forest. We would...
Sorry, we wouldn't be able to...
We would have a much better life.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to Skyjacks, Courier's Call. Cecilia Witwick was played by Aaron Catano-Saez, who can be found on Twitter at Aaron Catano-Saez or on the podcast All My Fantasy Children. You can further support Aaron's work in voiceover and worldbuilding at patreon.com/AaronCatano-Saez. June Hymnal was played by Allison Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at Dreams to Become. You can further support Allie's creative work at patreon.com/WhimsyArtifice. This episode was also edited by Allison Grauer. Kiran Rao was played by Palomi Pertep, who can be found on Twitter at PalomiSP. You can hire Palomi for layout and graphic design by visiting her website at palomipertep.com. And I'm Drew Merzieski. You can find me on Twitter at Worlds to Forge, and can further support my storytelling and creative work at patreon.com/whimsyartifice. The original score for this program was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott, who can be found on Twitter at Arnie Parrott. Official artwork was created by Jess Kraczynski, who can be found on Twitter at AngryArtist113. Courier's Call is a spin-off of Campaign Skyjacks on the One Shot Podcast Network. The setting of Sphere was inspired by the music of the Decemberists, and the game Illimat by Keith Baker, published by Together Studios. This podcast uses a modified version of the Cortex Prime system, designed by Cam Banks and published by Fandom Tabletop. Skyjack's Courier's Call is a part of the One Shot Podcast Network. Other One Shot podcasts include
System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games, except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was Hotwing. Don't even at them. Find their shows on SystemMasteryPodcast.com. And remember, while our show is rated E for everyone, this show was created by adults for adults, so listen at your own discretion.
That's all for this week. Until next time, heed the call, couriers. Right wrongs, do mercies, and take flight.
I'll tell you, my children, there's much I don't know, but the wind, she will take you where'er you must go, and it's better to age than never to grow. Singing way, hey, ho, singing way.
It is a bright and sunny afternoon in Teshert, and we can see the city in stark relief against a bright, brilliant blue sky. Our focus is taken to the Spire District, high, high above the mesa. Here in the Spire District, we can see these gondolas moving back and forth, birds flitting back and forth. It's a busy, busy day in this metropolis. And there, just on the periphery of the city, we see a couple of red feather ships, their feather weave alight as they make slow patrol past the city. There, not on the tallest tower, mind you, but pretty close to it, we can see a lone figure stand on a rooftop. Framed behind them is the red feather tower with this big emblem emblazoned on the side. This figure is standing their foot up on the lip of this tower. They wear a tattered red coat and a hood and a hastily pulled up black mask over their face. The figure is looking out, not at the desert about them or the city itself, but at this dot in the distance, a skyship far, far out. We zoom in and we can see this skyship, its guide sails green, hurtling towards the city at a breakneck pace, as fast as it possibly can, almost at an angle, as if they're diving towards the city. It gets closer and closer. And our friend, standing on top of the building, tenses. We see those red feather ships we saw just a moment ago on their patrol. They notice and they begin to turn. Bells begin to ring. And we can see in other parts of the city, there are more red feather ships coming forward to defend the city, stave off an attack from the ship. The ship is getting closer and closer. The bells are ringing riotously in the background. The red feather ships are closing in, beginning to create a barrier to block off this ship. At the last second, this ship banks hard to the right and fires warning shots, scattershot into these red feather ships. The ships scatter as it turns wide and comes a hair's breadth away from this tower. As it gets incredibly close to this tower, our friend in the red coat leaps from the tower. They jump maybe 20 feet or so, timing it just right as they land bonk, on the deck of the ship. The moment they land, there's a hearty, "She's clear!" And the furnace of the ship roars to life, and the ship rockets into the sky. The red feather ships hard on their heels. Now it's a chase. But as the moments tick by, our ship with the green guide sails passes over and out of sight, the red feathers finally breaking off. As they level out, high in the sky, almost into the clouds, we see our red-coated friend standing upon the deck, head down, hands latched on to a couple of guidelines in this frantic flight upwards. And we see them look up, their hood fall back. We see blonde hair and a teenage face that gets pulled down with the mask, and a hand reaches out of frame. Our friend reaches up, clasps the hand, and gets pulled up to be there in the face of Captain Brian Baru, Captain the Glass. Are you all right there?
Hi, I'm fine. A bit out of breath, I think, but so are we all, Captain.
Good, good to you. Now, why don't you take off that face there? I don't like the becoming of it.
And the red-coated, masked figure reaches up and pulls the mask off, and with it, as it peels away from their face, the blonde hair vanishes and is replaced with bright flame red locks, and the eyes change and the shape of the face changes. And standing before Brian Baru is Gracie O'Malley.
Well done to you, Grace. Well, this is quite a jump you did there.
It was a bit, aye.
All right, my friends. Let's get ourselves back to the Tempest Armada. Ku, you have command.
Captain.
Hey.
Did you get the book?
We see Brian, like, pat his coat and go, "Oh, the book!
I sent them right to you, Captain! How could you not have seen them?"
"Oh, goodness me, I've completely forgotten the book!"
"You forgot the book?"
Unless, then he reaches into his coat, "This is the book!" And he pulls out this red book.
Gracie's eyes roll so far back into her skull as she shakes her head. "Ah, Captain, you nearly had me there."
"And if I nearly had you there, then that's another one for me. Put on the board, boys!" They roll up this big board, and it's got the senior staff on it. And they go up and mark one down for Brian. "Here." And he tosses the book to Grace.
Grace catches it, looks down at it, and squeezes it a little bit. "A lot of trouble this one was, Captain."
"Aye, that it was, but it was necessary, I believe."
"Well, sure it's necessary. And I'm glad we did it."
"Of course. It's what she wanted, the Bandit Queen."
"'Tis."
"And if we can get that for her, then Coup de Glace is at service. Now take off that red. Doesn't look good on you."
"I agree." And Gracie immediately begins to shrug out of the old coat.
"No, I want to hear all about your adventure, Gracie. Heard you leapt out of the regulator?"
"I did.
I did.
I feel like some of the other crew, like Koo and whoever is there, like kind of clap Gracie on the shoulder, muss her hair up a little bit. Like, it was a bit reckless, I admit, but it was very cool, Captain."
Indeed. "Now, let's get back to work then, if you got nothing else to say to me. Go."
"Aye, Captain."
All right.
Heads off.
We see the captain with this red coat that he puts over his arm. He reaches down and picks up the kerchief as the Morrigan kind of comes out from behind him, and he hands it back to the Morrigan, going, "Why don't you keep better tabs on that? Full sail, my lads. Bring me that horizon."
"We're gonna stew the beer and the wine. We're stuck with each other through the worst of times. Turn our bones to stone and our blood to grind. For it's time to toast the XO.